Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we are talking about part 3, chapter 17. I didn't follow this convo between Anna and Betsy. What was the gist of it? Yeah, I got a bit lost on this one. Let me look something up. Anna Karenina, part 3, chapter 17. Wait, is that what I just said? 17? Yeah. And then I'm going to go to schmoop.com and read the little notes. This is a pretty good website, schmoop.com. It's got a chapter summary for every single chapter, and they're pretty handy. Here's the dot points. Two important guests at Princess Betsy's party, Lisa Merkelov and Safu Stoltz, both belong to a new select social circle that is openly hostile with Anna's. To make things even more awkward, Lisa Merkelov's admirer, an old man named Strimov, is one of Karenin's enemies in the office. So Anna had initially not wanted to go to this gathering, but she changes her mind because she wants to see Vronsky. The old Vronsky, planet Vronsky, with the gravitational pull of frickin' Saturn. She just can't stay away from this guy. Anna arrives early and sees Vronsky's footman. She remembers only then that Vronsky had said the day before that he was not going to attend the party. Whoops. It's already too late for her to turn back or to send a note with Vronsky's footman, so she enters. Betsy and Anna go have a cozy chat over some tea. Anna lies and says that she can't stay long because she says she promised to go see Countess Vrid. Betsy takes the note from Vronsky's footman and tells Anna that Vronsky can't come today, although Anna is certain that Princess Betsy knows all. The casual way that she mentions Vronsky to Anna makes it appear as though she genuinely knows nothing of the affair. They make small talk about the party's guests, but Anna can tell by Betsy's face that her friend is formulating a plan. Betsy says that she has to respond to Vronsky's note and writes something. Then she leaves Anna in the room for a moment. Anna runs over and writes her own note to Vronsky, asking him to be at Vridi's garden at 6 o'clock. Betsy sends off the note. Betsy and Anna talk about Lisa Merkelov and who admires Anna. In fact, Betsy tells Anna that Lisa has described Anna as a real heroine from a novel and that if she were a man, she would have committed 1,000 follies for Anna. The other guests arrive. There we go. A little summary. That helps. Swim said the mum of fishy said, this line gives a good explanation of why you didn't follow it. I did, by the way. Oh, good, you followed it. This play of words, this concealment of a secret, had a great charm for Anna, as it has for all women. It was not the necessity for secrecy, not its purpose, but the process itself that was fascinating. So Betsy knows about Anna and Vronsky. Anna knows she knows, but they are pretending to each other that Betsy doesn't know. Betsy knows that Anna wants / needs to see Vronsky, and Anna knows that she knows, but they go through the letter charade so that neither has to admit it. To fill the conversational space of all that unsaid knowledge, they speak inanities about others while they participate together in an unspoken subterfuge to get Vronsky to the party. They then talk about Anna's affair with Vronsky very obliquely by talking about others. Betsy is basically telling Anna to lighten up and conduct her affair as their acquaintance does, frivolously. JMama8779 says, I was out to lunch with this chapter too. Ah, what? Oh good, it wasn't just me. I am Norwegian says, I'm already missing Levin and the country life. Swim said the mum fishy responded, saying, not that Tolstoy was biased or anything. Yeah, so that makes sense why I didn't follow it, because they were not saying all the things that they were communicating to each other. It was just like a passive-aggressive politeness standoff. Isn't that the worst? Alright, well, that's that done. Let's keep reading. Chapter 18 of this book goes like this. Sounds of footsteps and a man's voice, then that of a woman, followed by laughter, reached them. and the expected visitors entered the room. Sappho Stoltz and a young man shining with a superabundance of health known as Vaska. It was evident that he flourished on underdone beef, truffles, and burgundy. Vaska bowed to the ladies, only glancing at them for a second. He came into the drawing room behind Sappho and followed her across the room as if he were tied to her, with his glittering eye fixed on her as if he were ready to eat her. Sappho Stoltz had fair hair and black eyes. She entered with a short, brisk step in shoes with high French heels and shook hands with the ladies with a firm grip, like a man. Anna had never met this celebrity before and was struck by her beauty, by the extravagant fashion of her costume, and by the boldness of her manners. On her head, the delicate golden hair, her own and others, was built up into such an erection that her head was as large as her shapely, well-developed, and much-exposed bust. At each strenuous step as she advanced, the shape of her knees and thighs was distinctly visible under her dress, and one involuntarily wondered just where, behind, under her heaped and swaying bustle, the real graceful little body ended, which was so exposed at the top and so hidden at the back and below. Betsy hastened to introduce her to Anna. "Just fancy, we nearly ran over two soldiers," she began, at once winking and smiling as she threw back her train, which she had jerked too much to one side. "I was with Vaska." "Oh, but you are not acquainted." And she introduced the young man by his surname and burst into ringing laughter at her mistake in speaking of him as Vaska to a stranger. Vaska again bowed to Anna but said nothing. He turned to Sappho. "You have lost the bet. We have arrived first. Pay up," he said, smiling. Sappho laughed still more merrily. "Surely not," she said. "Never mind. I will have it later." "All right, all right. Oh, yes," she suddenly said, addressing her hostess. "I am a nice one. I quite forgot I have brought you a visitor. Here he is." The unexpected young visitor Sappho had brought with her and forgotten was nevertheless so important a personage that, in spite of his youth, both ladies rose to greet him. He was Sappho's new admirer, and followed at her heels just like Vaska. Then the Prince Kalutsky arrived, and Miss Merkalova and Stremov. Lisa Merkalova was a slight brunette with a lazy oriental type of face and beautiful, everybody said unfathomable, eyes. The character of her dark costume, as Anna at once noticed and appreciated, was perfectly suited to her style of beauty. Just to the same extent as Sappho was compact and spruce, Lisa was limp and pliant. But to Anna, Lisa was by far the more attractive. When Betsy had spoken to Anna about her, she had said that Lisa was playing the role of an ingenuous child, but when Anna saw her, she knew that this was untrue. She was really ingenuous and a perverted but a sweet and irresponsible woman. It is true she had adopted the same tone as Sappho, and in Sappho's case two admirers followed her as if tied to her and devoured her with their eyes, one a young and the other an old man, but in her there was something superior to her surroundings. She had the radiance of a real diamond among false stones. This radiance shone out of her beautiful and really unfathomable eyes. The weary yet passionate look of those eyes, with the dark circles beneath them, was striking in its perfect sincerity. Looking into those eyes, everyone felt as if they knew her perfectly, and knowing her could not help loving her. At the sight of Anna, her whole face lit up with a joyful smile. "Oh, I am pleased to see you," she said, walking up to Anna. "Yesterday, at the races, I was just trying to get near you when you went away. I was so anxious to see you, yesterday especially. Was it not dreadful?" And she gave Anna a look that seemed to reveal her whole soul. "Yes, I never thought it would be so exciting," replied Anna, blushing. The company rose to go into the garden. "I won't go," said Lisa, smiling and sitting down beside Anna. "You won't either. Who wants to play croquet?" "I like it," said Anna. "Tell me, how do you manage not to feel bored? It cheers me to look at you. You are full of life, but I am bored." "You bored? Why, yours is the gayest set in Petersburg," said Anna. It may be that those who are not in our set are still more bored, but we, I at any rate, do not feel merry, but terribly, terribly bored. Sappho lit a cigarette and went out into the garden with the two young men. Betsy and Stremov stayed at the tea table. Bored, said Betsy. Sappho said that they had a very jolly time at your house yesterday. Oh dear, it was so dull, said Lisa Merkelova. We went back to my place after the races. Always the same people, the very same. Always the same goings on, the very same. We spent the whole evening lolling about on sofas. What was there jolly about it? Do tell me how you manage not to get bored, said she again to Anna. One has only to look at you to see that you are a woman who may be happy or unhappy, but who is not dull. Teach me how you do it. I do not do anything, said Anna, blushing at these insistent questions. That is the best way, Stremov joined in. Stremov was a man of about 50, getting grey, but still looking fresh, with a very plain, though intelligent, face full of character. Lisa Merkelova was his wife's niece, and he spent all his spare time with her. On meeting Anna Karenina, he, like a clever man of the world, being Karenin's enemy in the service, tried to be specially amiable to her, the wife of his foe. Don't do anything, he repeated with a smile. That is the best way, I have always told you, he went on, turning to Lisa Merkelova, that if one wishes not to be bored, one must not expect to be bored, just as one must not be afraid of not falling asleep if one wishes to avoid sleeplessness. That is what Anna Arkadyevna says. I should have been pleased to have said it, for it is not only wise but true, said Anna, smiling. No, but tell me why one cannot sleep, fall asleep, and cannot help being bored. To fall asleep one must have worked, and also to amuse oneself one must have worked. Why should I work when no one wants my work, and I can't and won't do it just for a pretense? You are incorrigible, said Stremov, without looking at her, and again turned to Anna. As he rarely met Anna, he could not say anything to her except trivialities, but he said these trivialities about her return from the country to Petersburg and of how fond the Countess Lydia Ivanovna was of her, in a way that expressed his wholehearted desire to be agreeable to her and to show her his respect and even more. Tushkevich came in to say that everybody was waiting for the croquet players. No, please don't go, begged Lisa Merkelova when she heard that Anna was leaving. Stremov joined her in the entreaty. The contrast will be too great, he remarked, if you go to see the old Countess Vridi after leaving this company here. Besides, your visit will give her an opportunity to backbite, while here, on the contrary, you arouse the best feelings, quite opposed to backbiting. Anna hesitated for a moment. The flattering words of this clever man, the naive, childish sympathy which Lisa Merkelova expressed to her, all these familiar society surroundings made her feel so tranquil, while what was lying in wait for her was so hard, that for a moment she doubted whether to remain and put off the dread moment of explanation. But recalling what awaited her when alone at home if she took no decision, and remembering her action, the recollection of which was terrible, when she took hold of her hair with both hands, she took her leave and went away. All right, there we go. That's chapter 18, I believe. Yes, chapter 18, done. Have your say on the subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. Have a wonderful existence, and I'll see you tomorrow.